A lot of baseball talk today, and we continue now with Bill Madden of the New York Daily News. Just came out with a book called A Baseball Memoir by Bill Madden, Yankees, Typewriters, Scandals, and Cooperstown.
All of it.
All of that. Bill, how are you today? Thanks for joining us.
I'm good, guys. Good to be with you.
Bill is on the Sullivan Super Service Fan Hotline, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. We're going to get to the book in a moment, Bill, but you did a really interesting piece on payroll disparity, the ownership problem, the fan unrest problem, all of that, and how Rob Manfred must be looking at this or is looking at this and saying, this economic imbalance is an issue. So I'll start with this question, Bill. What's the biggest problem here? The payroll disparity itself, baseball's, quote, ownership problem, or the fan unrest problem in certain markets like this one right here in Pittsburgh?
Well, the main premise of the column was that I was maintaining that the biggest problem baseball has is not payroll disparity, but an ownership problem. Because you've always got payroll disparity, but the fact of the matter is most of that has been solved by revenue sharing, but then you have owners like your owner in Pittsburgh and your owner in Tampa Bay, the owner in Miami, the owner in Oakland, now Sacramento, all of whom are getting big-time revenue sharing, like $60 million a year in revenue sharing, and are not spending it on players. And I pointed that out in the article. Somebody asked Manfred about it at the AP Sports Editors meeting in New York a couple of weeks ago, where all the sports editors get together with the various commissioners, and they asked Manfred about my column in particular about an ownership problem, and of course he dodged it, and he said, "Well, there's no question that we do have a disparity, a payroll disparity in baseball that we need to address." I think the way they're going to wind up addressing it is Manfred should be telling these owners, you got to do something, you got to start spending money. And I think what's going to happen is this new basic agreement that they're going to be working on starting on it already. The owners are going to fight hard for a salary cap. And if they do get a salary cap, it will be probably to the disadvantage of the small market owners, because in addition to a cap, they're going to insist upon a ceiling and a basement, so to speak. In other words, the small market teams are going to have to spend up to a certain amount of money on payroll.
And that's good, right?
It is good, but your man in Pittsburgh isn't going to want to do that. There was a story about, it came out about a couple of days ago, I don't know, did you guys see it, about how the Pirates are making one of the biggest profits of any of the teams in baseball?
Then we have reporting here, too. One site, Dayon Kovacevic, DK Pittsburgh Sports, says the Pirates lost money last year, but generally make money. So there seems to be some disagreement.
How can you lose money and make money?
Well, making right. Making money for most years, losing money in 2024.
But nothing's really changed over the last several years. They've been bad all along. So what changes? That's my question. And I agree with you. I think the transparency on this money coming into, where does it go? Because nobody really knows. It should go straight to, and they should be obligated to put it straight to the salary if they don't have some sort of system in place.
Yeah, well, I live down here in Clearwater, and I pointed this out about the Rays here in Tampa Bay. Stu Sternberg, I think he and Miami get the most in revenue sharing, and both around $60 million. But then you take another $60 million that all the teams get out of the Central Fund every year. This is the distribution of all the licensing money and all the subsidiary stuff besides that have nothing to do with what you're making yourself in regards to attendance and everything else. So basically, the Rays and probably the Pirates are in the same boat. They're getting over $100 million a year free, and they don't even have to sell one ticket to the to their games, and they're getting checks from Major League Baseball for over $100 million.
Yeah. Nope. Yeah. That.
And so when your payroll, it doesn't reach $100 million. You're making that excess plus what you make on gates and everything else that goes with this. So it has to be an incredible amount of money they're making. And I've always thought that.
In the meanwhile,
the big market owners, the Yankees and the Mets and the Dodgers and even most of the middle market owners in St. Louis and places like that, Chicago, whatever. They're sick and tired of this. They're sick and tired of subsidizing your owner, the Tampa Bay owner, the Miami owner. They're sick and tired of doing this. They say, wait a minute, this is crazy. Why should we give, especially if they're not going to spend it on players and try to be competitive?
Well, when they say, why should we give it to them? I mean, to have, and listen, Bill, I'm on the record for a long time here. The Pirates need to spend more money. They need to spend it well into the hundreds here. But the reason why these larger market teams need to help subsidize the smaller market teams is to at least, you know, try to approach some level of parity that, you know, the NFL decided a long time ago. The big markets and small markets are going to share revenues, so they're more equal here. That would be the reason.
Well, they are sharing revenues, so that's the whole thing. I mean, they're getting, like I said, they're getting $60 million free and clear.
Yeah.
Make up for the fact that they don't have the same kind of revenue stream that the Yankees and Dodgers and those teams have. But this makes up for it. And
does it? Does that make up for it? I don't know if that makes up for it. Bob, are you going to jump in here? You've been a big champion of saying that baseball's system, economic system, is ridiculous.
Yes, I know they make money. They make a ton of money. But the only way you can achieve on the field equality is to have it in the economic system. To me, you can't do it unless you are so spot on in every decision you make. You can't make a mistake. Everything
works.
Well,
Bill is saying that it's that the revenue sharing basically makes it equal.
It's not, but it's not. It's $60 million is what they've come up with in this general fund. They're still, even though they're sacrificing money, these big markets they're paying and supporting these other markets. They're still making more money on top of that. I got to believe that because when you look at the television revenue, I see those things. They're completely out of whack.
Well, yeah, but the whole point of revenue sharing is to help these smaller markets be able to compete. And they're taking this money, but they're not using it to compete.
Correct.
And that's the problem.
That's the problem. Yeah. What do you think? Is there any optimistic at all? And I know most people think this will never happen. It's just a pipe dream. Of a salary cap and floor at any point. They have a CBA coming up. What would it take to do it, and what chance do you give it to happen?
Well, I think if it's ever going to happen, this is the time it's going to happen, because I'm hearing all over baseball that the owners are going to really push hard this time, and that they are...
How many owners, though? I mean,
enough to get it through, yeah.
Wow.
I think there's, you know... And the fact that... I think they're also counting on the fact that the players will cave on this thing. And, this is not the same union that Marvin Miller had. This is a very different union now. These are players that have been used to getting everything they wanted as far as, you know, all their benefits and everything else. And, it's a situation where if they suddenly are cut off and there's a lockout or they're forced to go on strike. I think the owners are figuring, you know what? We'll see how long these guys can go on strike and be without all the stuff that they've become accustomed to. So I don't know. We'll see. But I can tell you this, there's going to be a work stoppage at some point in time next winter.
Ooh,
Bill Madden from the New York Daily News. Well, this is interesting because we just had Bob Nightingale on. At 11, he thinks, I asked him percent chance there's going to be a salary cap. He said 1%. You're giving it an honest chance to happen here. Would all the owners be on board? Would that be a unanimous sort of decision? Yes, let's institute a salary cap. And would it have to come with a floor?
Regardless, it has to come with a floor or else it can never get through. That's what most of the owners want. They want to stop the fact that Pittsburgh, as I said, Miami, the same culprits are getting over $100 million a year and not doing anything with it. They want to stop that.
Well, that's and you went so far as to say there could be a work stoppage, which is
I think there will be. There'll definitely be a lock at it sometime, and we'll see whether it extends into a spring training and beyond.
And you think the union will actually collapse and accept this moving forward?
Well, I can't speak for the union, but I think, like I said before, this is a very different union from Marvin Miller's union, where they would never accept anything. And if the owners hold firm on this, I think there's going to be a collision and something's going to have to happen. And, it may not be a hard salary. I don't know. But there's going to be a situation where they're going to have a floor and a cap.
Wow. I mean, that would be gigantic news here. So a team like the Dodgers, you're basically saying that they're so upset at teams like the Pirates that they would be willing to go to the extent of limiting their own spending to compel a team like the Pirates to spend $10 more million. They'd put a salary cap on themselves to compel the small market teams to spend $10 to $20 million.
Well, let's be clear about this. Whatever salary cap there is, it's going to be right around where it is right now. I mean, essentially, we have a salary cap now. I mean, how many teams can really afford this this luxury tax? What it's gotten to now over limit is $340 million or something like that. I mean, that in itself. Look how many teams have gone over that. Well, maybe three or four at tops. So you essentially almost have a salary cap now because of the luxury tax. There's three different levels of it. The Steve Cohen luxury tax being the top level, but none of these other teams, these middle market teams, they can't go over that. And even this year, the Yankees are talking about how they're trying to do everything possible to stay over that third luxury tax level.
Yeah.
So the way I see it now, they already have a salary cap.
I guess. I mean, the last thing I saw, I thought it said 9 teams exceeded the luxury tax threshold in 2024. So there's a lot of teams up there.
That's more than I would have thought. But
Bill, Bob Nutting recently told Jason Mackey of the Post-Gazette in the chat that he would like to be an agent of change, let's say. Somebody who can – now, those are just words. What could he do from this perspective here to try to – because he sees the system as not fair, yet he operates under it, and he voted for the last CBA. So he may tell you one thing, and the actions speak differently. What do you think he could do, or a group of smaller market owners can do?
Well, I read that, and I said that was laughable. Bob Nutting's going to be an agent of change? How? First of all, Bob Nutting, I don't know where he stands in the ranks of the owners as far as credibility is not a good word. As far as just influential, he's not one of the more influential owners in baseball. And most of the owners in baseball are not happy with the way he's operating. He's one of the top culprits as far as pocketing his revenue sharing. So if he's talking about being an agent of change, I don't know what he's talking about, because nobody's going to listen to him.
Yeah, I hear that. And it was a little bit sort of undermined himself in the same Q&A here with Jason Mackey of the Post-Gazette when Bob basically said, yeah, I'm going to be an agent of change here and a spokesperson for the smaller markets. And then Mackey, the reporter, says, when you say change, do you mean a salary cap and floor and revamped revenue sharing? And Nutting's first response is, quote, I'm not sure what it means. That didn't exactly give me great hope for this.
Right. He's just trying to make an excuse for not spending any money on players. Bottom line.
Bob?
Well, I mean, that's what's gone on here. And again, you can still draft and develop better and have people in place. I was asking this question earlier, and I'll ask you too, Bill. From afar, when you watch the Pirates with the Paul Skeens in your rotation with a Bubba Chandler about to come up, and the fact that they didn't do all that much, and in fact, they didn't do hardly anything in the offseason to help their offense, which was 28th in baseball last year, what's the national view on what they did or didn't do this past offseason, knowing you only have Skeens for probably a couple of more years, three, four more years?
Well, I think it's, you know, it's been fairly, you know, widespread criticism from, you know, the media all over the country. They've looked at the Pittsburgh situation and they say, what do they ever do from year to year to improve that team? They're nowhere in the free agent market for sure. I mean, I think the biggest free agent contract nothing's ever given out was like a 3-year deal for, I don't know, $25 million was it Liriano, Francisco Liriano? What year was that? 2015 or something?
Yeah, Ivan Nova got one.
Yeah,
Ivan
right,
Nova,
right around
3 years,
then, yes.
36 or something like that, yeah.
Well, anyway, I mean, that's the story. So, I mean, they were, you know, they did well in drafting Skeens, and was he a first-round pick? I guess he was.
First pick overall, yeah.
Yeah, that's right, the first pick overall, yeah. Well, I mean, if you're Paul Skeens, are you going to re-sign with this team? When they come to you and talk to you about an extension, I'm saying, extension? Why would I want to extend here?
Well, yes, we talk about that all the time. And
they're going to lose him.
Yeah.
And that's why you want to try to win now with them, and that's why, you know, what they did in the offseason should have been enhanced with more signings and to get to the bottom
Absolutely. I mean, I don't know what they were thinking, that they had – they had the personnel here to compete in that division. It's not a great division, although it seems to be a lot improved this year, especially the Cubs. But, I mean, you know, they have Skeens. They have this great pitcher. And really, they have not improved this team at all. And, of course, the O'Neill, the center fielder, they didn't seem to know what to do with him. That kid's a great talent. But basically, look at all their drafts in the recent years. Hasn't been good. And, you know, if you ask me, you know, firing the manager isn't going to change much. They need to clean house there in the whole front office. But at the same time, the owner's got to – he's got to figure out a way to at least talk to some real baseball people that are not just all analytics. And get some ideas about, he's got to get somebody new in there to run that operation for him.
Bill,
I mean, Ben Carrington may be a nice guy, but I mean, look at his record. 6 straight losing seasons.
Bill Madden of the New York Daily News. All right, Bill, let's get to the book. Yankees, Typewriters, Scandals, and Cooperstown, a baseball memoir by you, Bill Madden. So tell us a
little bit
about this.
That covers a lot there, that title.
Yeah, the Typewriters, yep. I'm curious about. That's how you used to cover games. Ron Cook, yep. A guy we used to have here, used to deliver his story by Pony Express, didn't he, Bob?
Yes, he did.
Yeah, right. That's what people say about me. Western Union. I wasn't that far away from Western Union, really, when I started out in the early 70s with United Press International. But I finished the Tom Seaver book. That came out right after he died. And my agent said to me, that was a couple of years ago, and my agent said to me, what's your next book? And I said, I think Seaver's going to be it for me. And he said, no, you should write your own book. I said, what are you talking about? I said, nobody wants to read about my life. And he says, no, Billy, you've got all these great stories that need to be told. So I said, Rob, if you can sell it, I will write it. And we did a nice deal with Triumph. A very good publishing company, and the cover of the book is spectacular. It's a beautiful color shot of Yankee Stadium, and on the sidelines, on the baseline, is a group of Yankees, most prominently Aaron Judge. And I said to everybody, I said, if you've got Aaron Judge on your cover, you've got a pretty good chance of selling some books, especially in New York. But it's an all-encompassing book. The reason Typewriters are in there, because I wanted to talk about my life as a sports writer before the age of cell phones and computers and everything else. I mean, we used to type our stories up. When I was at UPI, I very seldom had the opportunity of actually being able to type my stories up and send them out. I had to dictate most of them because in those days, you know, I'd be at a press conference or something, and something news would break, and I had to run to a payphone to dictate my story. In fact, my boss at the time, Milton Richmond, said, "Always have your dime, Billy," and that's the title of one of the chapters. Always have your dime, because it was a totally different industry back then. And our motto at UPI was deadline every minute. Well, that's the way it is today. Everybody's deadline is every minute, but they're able to do it through cell phones and tweets. And
no doubt. Well, leave us with this, Bill. Man, to cover the Yankees for that long. My family's from New York, and I remember I was in New York when Thurman Munson tragically passed away. What's the single biggest story you ever covered in all your time covering the Yankees, Mets, and New York sports?
Well, I guess my biggest scoop was finding out a couple of days before it happened that Tom Seaver had been left unprotected by the Mets in something they called the free agent compensation draft. They had just gotten him back after trading him to Cincinnati. He'd been in exile, as I called him, in Cincinnati for 5 years. And they had just gotten him back. And then baseball, as a settlement of the 1981 baseball strike, they had to come up with some way to compensate teams that lost free agents. And they came up with this idea of having a draft. And the teams, a pool actually, and teams were able to protect, like, I think it was at the time, it was like 12 players or something like that on their entire organization. And then the teams losing a free agent could pick from that pool. So it wasn't a direct taking from the team that took the free agent. That was the way they settled this thing. And I got a call from a friend of mine who worked in the commissioner's office, and he asked me and he asked me if I was going to cover the free agent compensation draft that Friday. And I said, I don't plan on it because neither the Mets or the Yankees lost a free agent, so it's not really a New York story. And he said to me, oh, yes, it is, Bill. You wait and see. And I said, what are you talking about? He says, you're not going to believe who the Mets left unprotected on their list. And I said, who? He said, Tom Seaver. I said, are you kidding me? How could they do that? So now I had to get, he says, well, not only that, have they left them unprotected, but I got a friend who works for the White Sox in their front office, and he told me they're going to take him on Friday. I said, wow. So now I had to get a confirmation on this story. So I called over to Frank Cashin, the Mets general manager, on the phone, and I told him, I said, I understand that you have left Seaver unprotected on your list for Friday. And he kind of hemmed and hawed, and he says, well, Billy, we've been friends for a long time. I'm not going to lie to you. We left him unprotected, but he's a 40-year-old pitcher. We didn't think anybody would take him, plus the fact that he's our guy. And I said, well, I understand all of that, Frank, but I can tell you I got it on pretty good authority that they are going to take him.
And they did in the end, correct?
And they did at the end.
Well, yep. I look forward to reading, Bill, that story and many more in the book. We appreciate you taking the time today. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it, Bill.
Okay, guys. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Good luck with the book.
Can you imagine that? All of a sudden, Tom's... That's like... he's as big a legend in New York as almost there's ever been.
Oh, no question.
And he goes to the White Sox.
That was so different compared to Nightingale. They both have totally different thoughts about... CBA, which is going to expire, and it'll be a lockout, and they'll get a salary cap, or at least a 50-50 chance. Nightingale says 1%.
I think he does make a good point that the players' union isn't what it used to be, although we'll find out.
Because they haven't really been tested to that point
yet. It's long been regarded as the best union, or the strongest union, I should say, in all of sports. If the owners are willing to get to the point of, you're going to miss checks, do you really feel that strongly about no salary cap? Yeah, we're going to find out. Very interesting, Bob.